Good Erev Shabbos, everybody. Today we are up to session number 16 in the Chasam Shmooz, You Wish You Had But Never Had. Again, very quickly, I want to review a few important points, which is that, number one, this is it's very important that everything be learned in context, so one should not skip around. If you're listening to this as a recording, you should hear all the previous shiurim because one idea builds on the other. We are going to talk about different ideas in marriage, and it's important for each person to know what's considered for them tznius and not. For some people, one thing might be a trigger; for other people, it wouldn't. And that, in general, this is an important thing we don't normally discuss in public, but because it's really a Harav Hashah, people should get a good idea and a good sense as to what the Torah expects of them. We are doing this project, and on the topic of what the Torah expects, it's also important to say that I'm not a posek, so I'm going to tell you things and give you the Ma'ar Mekomos, but it really isn't a psak. I cannot pasken for you, but there will be important information for you. Now, we're finishing, hopefully today, we're finishing a segment, which would be the second to last segment in this shiur, which is that we were talking about different distorted ideas and beliefs that contribute to lack of shalom bayis, that people may have be laboring under false assumptions, ideas that are not helpful, beliefs that are not helpful, that strengthen and justify dysfunctional behavior. While on the other hand, there are oftentimes very reasonable ways for people to behave and respond if they're able to see things objectively. So we're up to the 12th distorted belief. One other thing, if anybody has any questions, they can feel free to text during the shiur to 718-793-1376. That's 718-793-1376. Also, for any questions in general, you can email me at Simcha Feuerman, SimchaFeuerman @gmail.com. Okay, so again, we are up to the 12th distorted cognitive distortion, the 12th distorted belief. And that is that many people express this, Jewish, non-Jewish, which is that a person's nature is essentially unchangeable. And so when you have a spouse that has some kind of problematic personality feature, either the person, him or herself, will say this, or a frustrated loved one will say, well, the person really can't change because that's his nature. That's who he is. And you know, as a therapist that works with couples a lot, I get this question often, can he change? Can she really change? And before we talk about the psychology of it, let's talk about what the Rambam says about it. You know, there's a Gemara. The Gemara Nidan Daf Lamed, I think Amud Beis, where Rabbi Yishmael says there's machlokes if you show and the Chachamim about a certain matter, which really is a scientific matter. It's a machlokes about how long it takes for the zygote really to turn into an embryo, for there to be tsuras havlad, for there to be a formed human being enough that the resultant miscarriage would have a din of a vlad, of a child, and there's different halachas that come out from that. Anyway, so the Chachamim bring a raya from Cleopatra, the queen of Alexandria. They conducted a rather cruel experiment, which I don't want to get into, but they conducted a rather cruel experiment to verify when the embryo becomes an embryo. And Rabbi Shmuel's retort was, "Atem mevi in raya min hashoytim. You bring a proof from the fools. Ani mevi raya min haTorah. I'm giving you a proof from the Torah." So the point is that there are scientific ideas and there are Torah ideas. Oftentimes, there's a great affinity between the two. Let's take a look at the Torah idea about this, then we can talk about some of the psychological aspects as well. So the Rambam says, in Hilchos Deos Perek Aleph, and he talks about the nature that each person has. And in Hilchos Deos, the Rambam's pretty clear that people do have different natures, that there's an innate nature. The Rambam over there mentions there's some people that tend more toward anger. There are some people that tend more toward lust. There are some people that tend more toward stinginess. There are some people that tend more toward gluttony. He mentions all these things, and he says that these are character traits that seem to be innate. And yet, very importantly, the Rambam says that a person can change the programming. The program can be rewritten. The Rambam says, "Keti jargal odem afton v'deis elu hachi yikvu bo." A person can accustom himself to new qualities until they become established within him. Yaseh v'yashana v'yishlash v'yishalish v'masim sha'osa al p'yadeus ha'mtayos. He should repeat and tripeat and do it three times until these views become, these moderate and reasonable views become a part of his nature. The Yachspem Tamid Ashu Maseim Kalam. And he should keep doing them until it becomes easy to do. Bloyam Torah Falav. It won't even be a burden anymore to behave in a certain way that he began to accustom himself to it. Vikbu Hadeos Panafsho. And then those beliefs will become affixed in his mind. So the Rambam describes sometimes you have to go to the extreme for a period of time in order to change your temperament. But the Rambam seems to believe that, you know, indeed a person's temperament can change. From a psychological point of view, I think that's certainly supported. The interesting thing is, how far does it go? In other words, is it an overlay, or does it go down to the core? Say, for example, a person is by nature shy. If a person is by nature shy, he could perhaps learn, as the Rambam talks about, and as a cognitive behavioral therapist may talk about, different strategies and tactics in order to behave in a way that he's not shy. And he can master those skills and behave in a way that he's not shy. But deep down, right, is he still shy? And is this just an overlay of a learned behavior? Or is it so deep that actually it changes the programming? So I think different people would have different opinions about this. But I would tell you there's some interesting research these days, and you could Google this as well. Google neuroplasticity. That's what you want to Google. There's a lot of research today about how extremely responsive the human brain is. Now, of course, the younger we are, the more responsive it is, and as the mission of us, I forget where it says this, maybe it's, I'm not going to guess right now, forget which parak, but the mission of us says it, right? When you're a young person, it's like writing on clean parchment, right, on Diyuftura Naki, and if you're older person, it's like writing on Diyuftura Mochuk, on recycled parchment that the ink had to be scraped off and rewritten. They didn't waste anything in those days. But in any case, regardless of whether it's hard or easy, there are studies that show that the brain actually changes. And you can Google this as well. Google something like London cabbie study in neuroplasticity. Anyway, something to know about the streets of London, even though I never was there, so maybe someone else could verify this, but apparently it's very complex and there's a lot of traffic. And London cabbies have to go through a special training and test in order to be cabbie drivers. And they have to be able to answer questions about how to get from point A to point B. And the answer is not sufficient that it be correct. It has to be the best way to get from point A to point B. And so cabbies have to develop a tremendous sense of spatial awareness and basically have a Mac inside their head. And with functional MRIs, we're able to identify different parts of the brain that operate when we engage in different activities. And there is a part of the brain that's responsible for spatial awareness, for maps, and engaging distance and such. And what they noticed was that if you took a functional MRI of the brain of a cabbie before he started his job, and then you took it several years later, that part of the brain actually expands. It becomes more robust and larger. And the truth is, common sense tells us this. We know that when we do exercise and we push our bodies to respond in a certain way, we develop muscles and greater capacity. And why should the brain be any different? So I submit to you that it's very possible that while perhaps initially changes in personality are superficial, still valuable, but superficial overlays and adaptations, eventually they can actually become core. And we know this is also, the Chinuch says this on the mitzvah of the Korban Pesach, etim lo sish brubo, he says, mitoch hachitzonim, ma'orah hapnimim, the external behavior can elicit an internal response, v'chulei, v'chulei. All right, so one should not despair, one should not give up hope, and believe that a person can change. He can change, she can change, a spouse can change. Now, it's very important that we approach our spouses with great deference and respect, and we don't expect them necessarily to change. People want to be loved and accepted for who they are. And this is a collaborative, respectful, loving kind of conversation that you have to have with somebody when they have a character trait that really is truly problematic and can't be overlooked, and they need to change, and yet to speak to them in a way that shows tremendous acceptance and love and understanding that this particular character trait is not all of them, and that you will be patient and supportive and helpful in helping the person make that change. But change can be made. That's the important part. The last distorted belief that we're going to talk about in this series is the idea that people have that there's something wrong with having to tell the other person what you want and what you need. Now, it's true that it is much more romantic and much more inspiring when somebody remembers that it's your anniversary or your birthday, or knows what's your favorite dish, or knows how you want to be treated. And that's a wonderful bonus. That's a wonderful thing if you're able to get that. But it is completely unreasonable and a sam movis to resent and hold it against the other person when he or she does not understand what you want. And so sometimes you may have to explain this many, many times. You need to explain it gently and clearly and carefully so that the person is able to begin to know what you really want. And yes, to a degree, having to spell out, this really makes me feel good when you do this, or this is really a problem when you do this, or today I really need extra loving or extra affection because I'm feeling so-and-so. to a degree, it takes a little bit away from the fun to know that you have to tell the person what you want in order to be loved. But standing on ceremony is complete and total apotheosis. And the truth is that there is a secret wish. We really do have this secret wish that we be understood, that people read our minds, because, our mommies did it for us when we were very young. Before we even could talk, when we first got introduced into the world, something magical seems to happen, which is that mommy knew whatever we needed. She knew when we were wet, and she knew when we were hungry, and she knew when we were tired. She always knew what she wanted. And so on some fundamental level, there's a tremendous yearning to enter into a romantic, loving relationship where all one's needs are automatically anticipated. And like I said, sometimes we get that. It's an extra bonus, but it's utterly unrealistic. Something else that plays out as well is a certain sense of shame or guilt. Many times people feel ashamed or guilty to have their need met. So what do? They play a game. They wish, hope, and ultimately resent the fact that their spouse doesn't gratify this wish. And then what happens? They get frustrated, but they feel too ashamed to ask for what they want, right? So, relating it to addicts, and again, we know sometimes in this year, we speak pretty explicitly. The different approaches that one can take toward taiva. And in other shiurim, we explored that, and we talked about the Ravid's five kavanas and many nuances, which is why you need to hear the whole shiur, and it's not a good idea to skip around. So I'm not going to review all territory. But I'll say this, that a man or a woman, in different ways, is in their rights if they have a taiva, and they need their taiva gratified. And there's no shame. There's no shame in the man saying that, I'm really feeling strongly tonight, and I really would like, if it's possible, for you to be available and to make time. And what stops the person from doing that is mostly shame. And the shame leads to resentment and to anger. Now, it's true, halakhically, a woman is not supposed to ask explicitly. She's supposed to hint. But it's actually considered a good thing if she hints, and it's very valuable. So we need to take responsibility for our needs and our wants, and we need to be willing to speak about them clearly to the people that we love so that we can get the love that we need. Now, that concludes the 13 distorted beliefs that people have that interfere with marriage, and Mr. Hashem, next week we will start a new union, which is going to be, as far as I know, I really can't think of anything else, as far as I know, that will be the last section of this year. We're going to talk about Torah ideas regarding birth control and family planning, because it, in fact, too, is an important part of Shalom Bayis, an important part of understanding our roles as people who have sexual needs within the bounds of the Torah. We're going to shut off the recording and open it up to questions. Hold on a moment.